All right, guys, why don't we go ahead and get started? And let's pray. Lord, we thank you for this day. We thank you that we are Americans. And we thank you for your blessing on our great nation. Help us as American Christians to bring you glory by responsibly voting for concerns in our constitutional republic. Bless our time now as we discuss some important issues, and may it all be for your glory. In Jesus' name we pray, amen. All right, does everybody have the voter's guide, I'm calling it? That's sort of the really rough outline that you can have, and you know, we'll talk about some of those. But let me first say, if any of you have heard the name Tim Keller, okay, he's just a famous pastor, but he has a quote that says, "It is the settled tendency of human societies to turn good political causes into counterfeit gods. One of the signs that an object is functioning as an idol," we've talked about idols, "is that fear becomes one of the chief characteristics of life. If our counterfeit God is threatened in any way, our response is complete panic." And so that's sometimes what I'm seeing in our nation. And quite frankly, on both sides, more fear-mongering, appealing to emotion and anger than thought, reason, and understanding. Now, I think you guys, it's a fair bet, or you guys should know, just so you know where I'm coming from. Christian, of course, and that's first and foremost. But I'm very conservative. I'm to the right of Attila the Hun. So when it comes to this, if you have noticed a little too much bias, suck it up. So what about us, though, and political trends? Do we hope in political leaders? Do we consider the opposition as evil people versus maybe some of their bad ideas? So what we've been talking about is our role, because as Jesus told his disciples, we are in the world, but we are not to be of the world. So for God's glory, then the big idea for all of this, for God's glory, you and I should vote responsibly. So God's glory, we've talked about what the Bible says about human government. God gave us human government just because that's one of the institutions that ultimately came from him. And so that's the why. Why should we be in the world and actually part of this somehow? And we've talked about a lot of biblical reasons, kings back then, what is the origin and function of human government? But then we looked at our political or our biblical purpose and mandate and our responsibility. God wants us to be responsible properly for his glory to human government. We should not be anarchists, no matter how bad the government gets. A lot of the writing, when Paul talks about submit to the government, he's talking about the Roman Caesar. So no matter how bad our president is, he's not quite as bad as the Roman Caesars could become later. And we are to vote responsibly. And so that's what we've talked about, what the Bible says. And then last time, and were there more of those handouts over there on the Constitution? You don't need to do that, but they'll be on the website. But at what the Constitution, we talked a lot about the Constitution last time. The founders, what the Federalist Papers, what the Constitution, the Declaration mean, our founding documents. And so even something as simple as, in our democracy, okay, Yes, but technically, we are a constitutional republic that has democratic elements. And so just being able to recognize what our responsibility as Americans, the what, you know, so Bible says why, Constitution tells us what. So we'll talk about that today a little bit. You know, there are some things that, yeah, if we could, you know, if we could do this, it'd be a good thing biblically. But at the federal level, our Constitution does not allow it. And that's, we looked at that a little bit last time, the problem, the rise of the administrative state and progressivism, the good old-fashioned nice progressives like Woodrow Wilson, maybe not nice, Woodrow Wilson, Theodore Roosevelt, you know, the original progressives that wanted to progress beyond the limitations of the Constitution, the perceived limitations of the enumerated powers. You know, today I would submit we really have neo-progressives that are, that not only do they not like the Constitution, they don't like morality, ethics, anything else. So responsibly, and we looked at especially the separation of powers, federalism, we have a federal government, state, and local. What these issues, where do they belong? I think we live in a culture now where everybody looks to Washington to solve our problems. No, your local school board ought to handle that, not some bureaucrat in Washington. So that will shape how we look at some of these. So when we vote then, we're going to look at how should we be voting or thinking about some of these particular issues, and by considering what the Bible and the constitutional dictate. So how? So what I will try to be careful, I've already told you where I sit. You know, Attila the Hun's here, I'm over here. But I think it'll be pretty easy to figure out. And because this is being recorded, I'm going to obey the bad Johnson Amendment back in the 50s, good old LBJ, about, oh, you can't mention candidates by name. Bah humbug. But I will try to respect that. Yeah, and it will be very obvious where I think we ought to be standing. So the Bible, take your Bibles and look at Matthew chapter 5. Very familiar passage. So just to set the stage here, Matthew 5, the Sermon on the Mount, and right after the Beatitudes are what are known as the similitudes. Similitudes. You know what a metaphor is? You know what a simile is? Do you guys remember your sophomore grammar? Matthew 5:13. You are the salt of the earth. But if the salt loses its flavor, how shall it be seasoned? It is then good for nothing but to be thrown out and trampled underfoot by men. You are the light of the world. A city that is set on a hill cannot be hidden, nor do they light a lamp and put it under a basket, but on a lampstand, and it gives light to all who are in the house. Let your light so shine before men that they may see your good works and glorify your Father in heaven. So if you want to think about it, the light of the gospel of Jesus, we as his followers, we reflect that light. We are to be a shining reflection of that light in a dark, sin-darkened world. But it's not about, look at us. We are reflecting the glory of God. We want people to give praise to God. Okay, so that's the idea of how Christians should be interacting with government. And the two extremes that I see our culture sort of going to, extreme of theonomy, which is theos, rule, theonomy, And so in other words, well, all we need is the Bible, and we should just make everybody obey all the commands in the Old Testament. Hey, when Jesus comes back, that's the way it'll be. But right now we live in America. How are we going to get on? We can, but is it productive to force people who are unbelievers to try to live this way? So that's the extreme example of what's called Christian nationalism. And of course, the people that say that mean that in a negative sense. I suspect all of us are Christian nationalists. I'm a Christian, and I love my country. And I'm definitely a Christian nationalist, but I'm the friendly kind. I'm the nice kind. I'm the biblical kind. And then the other extreme, so let's make everybody live by the Ten Commandments, apart from the working of the Holy Spirit. Or on the other extreme is separation of church and state. How often have you heard that? You religious people, they really don't even want us thinking about this stuff at home. You know, they'd like to tell us what we can believe, I think, in our own home. But you need to keep your Christian faith out of the public square. Bah humbug. That's... Oh, and I shake my head at other countries, but we're talking about our constitutional, and the founders would say bah humbug on that. You know, we looked at that last time. Where did they come from in their background and their thinking? So we are Christians and Americans, so that should determine what we do. Our belief determines our behavior, including how we vote. So if you know the name Dr. Benjamin Rush, he was one of the signers of the Declaration. He says, nothing can be politically right that is morally wrong. So that's sort of how we're going to think about biblical and then constitutional. So our priorities today then, we're going to look at biblical. Are they morally commanded? Are they God-honoring? Are they permissible? Are they practical? See, that's the hard one. There's a lot of things that, man, if I could feed every puppy in the world, I would. But is that practical? And so, ultimate morality, what does the Bible have to say, properly understood, interpreted? You know, I get a kick out of politicians on both sides of the aisle who love to quote scripture out of context, and they have no idea what they're saying. And they, you know, some who was our illustrious Secretary of Transportation, I can't remember his name or his husband's name. No, but he made the case. Just, you've probably heard this. He made the case of abortion is biblically okay because back in Genesis 2, okay, Pete, you're going to teach me the Bible now. I mean, Secretary, you're going to teach me the Bible now? And he said, back in Genesis chapter 2, it says God took the dust of the ground and the breath and put in him the breath of life. And made the first man, Adam. So a human being only has the dust of the ground, the physical body, and the breath of life. So until that thing in the mother's womb comes out and takes its first breath, it's not a person. I never knew that, Pete, as Secretary. You know, but that's the kind of reasoning sometimes that people misuse the Bible. So biblical and then constitutional. So we're going to look at, is it allowed? That's the big thing. A lot of us want the government to do things, but constitutionally, at the federal level, is it allowed? And at what level of government then? And that's where we're going to see a lot of these issues should be local issues, I believe. In other words, are they legal? So there are a lot of things that are morally ethical. but constitutionally, are they legal? So, all right, so you've got the voter's guide. I think what we'll do today, because you may not want to look at all of these in depth, but look at any topics that you want to look at more in depth, but I will sort of go down and just give you the short version answer on a lot of them. But some of them are major enough that I think we should maybe spend a little more time. So stop me, correct me if I'm wrong, but you know, let's understand some of these, maybe some issues and information that you haven't really thought about. So the first one on the list there is abortion. That's a pretty big issue. And I would say, you know, for me, and I would hope for all of you, that is probably the biggest issue, that if we understand abortion biblically, scientifically, medically, biologically, that is something that we should be very clear about. You know, so, and on some of these, they, out of your blue book, I saw some of you brought the blue book. There's a couple issues, you know, that I don't, you know, how'd you vote on shooting bobcats? Well, we're not going to talk about that really, but when it comes to some of the issues, so vote no on issue 79. That's an easy one. That one's number 79 is changing our state constitution to mandate abortion in our state constitution.
My body, you know, I have a right, you know, reproductive rights by some of these liberal women, and they ignore the fact that it's not their body, it's the body of this being.
Okay, why don't we talk about that a little more, because that's one I think we ought to, I'm pretty sure I would hope we all agree pretty much on that, but just some issues, you know, that go a little deeper than, because that's obvious to me, but it's not obvious to other people. How?
Okay, the reason I'm saying that is the wording on the ballot is slightly different than the book. And so
it can be deceptive,
because it talks about having abortion covered by insurance. Okay? Well, they want us to fund the insurance.
Well, which is still a no.
Yeah.
Vote no on 79. That's an easy one. Actually, in the way we're going to cover these more in depth if you want, but sort of the issues, I have them organized under life, liberty, property, pursuit of happiness. So, you know, these issues under these three major headings. But we're going to look at the biblical view, then the constitutional view, and then any comments about being in depth on what is abortion, when does life begin, things like that, and then a conclusion. So the short end, the cliff note answer, biblically, abortion, we should be voting, Christians voting for laws against abortion. No on 79. In the Bible, it is strongly, abortion is talked about in the biblical terms of that day. Strongly condemned as the taking of innocent life. You know, induced abortion. So biblically, it's a horrible evil. Now, constitutionally, that is a domestic issue, not a federal issue. And so that's one thing President Trump, his personal life is his personal life, but he did under the Dobbs, not he, but the Supreme Court, under the Dobbs decision, sent the issue back to the states where it belongs. And so it's a state issue. And so protecting life. So state and local life, state and local laws, we should be voting against abortion. And that's number 79, however it's worded, is a no. The federal government's role in this, which is what some of the political parties definitely disagree on at the national level, they should be encouraging and not hindering state laws that protect life. So it's a state issue. But one of the things our federal government does is it basically blackmails. You know, if you want our money, you're going to do what we tell you. That is so unconstitutional. And the states go along with it. So, you know, nobody's innocent here. So the conclusion then on abortion, the short answer, you're voting for pro-life candidates. You know, saving life, that is a function of government and not just the macro, good governments preserve life. And at the federal level, that's the importance of the Supreme Court. You know, the way our separation of powers, the president and the Senate then approves Supreme Court justices. So that's why there is an importance in who's in the White House, because they will be appointing judges that are more, like we looked at last time, textualists, originalists, that actually like the Constitution. And so you want to be aware of where people stand on that. And that's one thing that, you know, in my opinion, which I respect very much, by the way, but that's one thing President Trump did get right when he appointed Supreme Court justices. Were they as conservative as I wanted? No. But at least they honor the Constitution. And, you know, that was the Supreme Court that sent Dobbs, overturned Roe v. Wade, back to the states.
And now the Democrats want to pack the Supreme Court and get additional justices so that they can get their way.
Same thing FDR tried.
Yeah, and you know, the he was threatening something to pack the courts, and the courts gave in, which kept it at 9. You know what? Have you heard that bumper sticker? That a switch in time saved 9. The Supreme Court backed down and voted on some of FDR's stuff, you know, then gave him sort of what he wanted. And so then they saved 9. But he was threatening. And so that's something to be aware of now. The Constitution does not mandate the number of justices, but you can see that's a naked power play by a political party to, you know, stack it with water down the votes, if you will, by judges that will vote our way. Yeah, and so those are second order issues that, you know, so who the president is and control of, I'm probably more concerned about the control of the Senate. You know, that if there's a healthy majority with a more conservative party in the Senate, you know, then that tamps down. But as we saw last time, but with the rise of the administrative state, a lot of these agencies legislate, they are judicial, they are they perform all functions, all three functions of the federal government with no separation of powers. So, you know, Lee, when you dig your lake to have your swimming cabana and all that stuff, and the EPA comes in and they tell you, you're in violation, you can't do that. And you say, well, but it's my land. And then they say, well, you can come to our court and we'll hear your complaint. And then we will impose penalties because you obviously you threaten democracy with that pond of yours. You win. Okay, so Kelvin, would you, Luke 1, 41 to 44. Scott, Exodus 21, 22 to 25. This is one topic I want to look at more in depth, because sometimes people say, oh, you religious people, you don't know the science, and your Bible doesn't tell us anything about that. Wrong. So, for example, Exodus 20, Ten Commandments, you shall not murder. Okay, murder doesn't talk about kill. We'll talk about, if you want, capital punishment. Are there times when killing is okay? Biblically, yes. War, capital punishment, I believe, and well, the Bible believes. So you shall not murder. And so that's the end result of what is that human being in the womb. And that's some of the language, you know, of course, oh, it's a fetus. Okay, good try. That's just a Latin term for baby. But, you know, that's, you know, Pete Buttigieg, the secretary, his, you know, his biblical reasoning. Well, he hasn't drawn a breath, so he's not a person. And have you ever noticed, when does personhood begin? You know, so that just semantics. Okay.
And it happened when Elizabeth heard the greeting of Mary that the babe leapt in her womb. And Elizabeth was filled with the Holy Spirit. And she spoke out with a loud voice and said, blessed are you among women, and blessed is the fruit of your womb. But why is this granted to me that the mother of my Lord should come to me? For indeed, as soon as the voice of your greeting sounded in my ears, the babe leapt in my womb for joy.
Okay, so that's the Annunciation. The angel Gabriel came, and when to Elizabeth, but then when Mary came in and greeted cousin Elizabeth, John the Baptist, who was, you know, Elizabeth's child and the cousin of Jesus, the babe leapt in the womb. That's about as scientific as you're going to get in biblical language, but that is a baby in the womb responding to the announcement of course, the birth of the Savior. So just, you know, just the Bible talking about life in the womb. Scott.
Exodus 21:22-23 says, if men fight and hurt a woman or a child so that she gives birth prematurely, yet no harm falls, he shall surely be punished accordingly as the woman's husband imposes on him. And he shall pay as the judges determine. If any harm follows, then
you
shall give life to life.
Keep going. 25.
Tooth for tooth, hand for hand, foot for foot, burn for burn, wound for wound, strike for strike.
Okay, do you get that? That's some of the Mosaic civil law. But if men are fighting, a woman who is pregnant and she gets injured and she gives birth prematurely, you know, a premature birth, yet no harm follows to the baby, he shall surely be punished, you know, as normal penalties, whatever the husband imposes, and pay the proper fine. But if any harm to the child, the genders, the language is more specific than we have in English, but if any harm follows to the child, then you shall give life for life, eye for eye. You know, it's putting to death. In other words, if the child, whatever happens to the child, now this is after a premature birth, but I mean, can you think of cases today where some of the controversies are, abortion's okay for 9 months, And even if the child is born, there are some states that allow. Remember that, who was it? Oh, the Governor Northam. And in
Virginia, Tim Kaine, when he was Hillary Clinton's running mate.
Did he say that? And then Governor Northam, though, was a medical doctor, who, and he said, we'll make the baby comfortable, but we'll leave it there to die. I mean, that's beyond abortion, if there's any beyond, but that's infanticide. And Tim Walz allows it up in Minnesota. So
I looked that up, and just to show you how evil Colorado is, in Colorado, a person in the womb, persons in quotes in that, who has not been born, cannot be called a homicidal victim.
Yeah.
Unless they are injured in the womb and then born and die, then it can be a homicidal victim.
See how convoluted it can get. Okay, so another just a couple of verses. Psalm 51:5. Behold, I was brought forth in iniquity. That's going to our sin nature. Out of the womb, we are vipers and diapers. So sweet, innocent little baby, not when it comes to original sin. And in sin, my mother conceived me. Okay, so that's not biology. That's not teaching biology, but it's making the statement that at conception, that baby was conceived in sin, in the sense of the line of Adam, sin nature. Psalm 139:13. For you formed my inward parts. You covered me in my mother's womb. So just in the language of the Bible, 2,000-3,000 years ago, it's affirming life and referring to babies in the womb. So we've talked about then, well, that's the biblical view. We've talked about it constitutionally. Okay, that's preserving life. That is not one of the enumerated powers for the federal government. That is a right reserved to the states and the people. So that's why, believe me, if Congress wanted to pass a law, outlawing all abortion, never happened, but that would be an unconstitutional law. Would I like it? Of course I would, but that's unconstitutional. And that's where we have to recognize sometimes if my state, Colorado, good old Colorado, if our state doesn't do what I want Washington to fix our state. Okay, that's wrong, no matter what side, because the other side goes, if Texas passes a law, liberals want the federal government to overrule Texas. And that's happening even under the Dobbs decision. States are passing abortion bans or something, and they are being overturned by judges that are, not willing to let the states make the decision. So
it's interesting, Peter, when you say that, there's one candidate who has stated that they would sign a law that contradicts the state's laws.
Well, and so, and that lousy, our Supreme Court, it's just a Nazi court. And so the Dobbs decision, if I don't like their decision, we'll just ignore it. And that's anarchy that, we may not like some of these decisions, but that goes back to God gave us government that, I don't like it, but it is now the law or a Supreme Court decision. We should obey that, and of course work to overturn it. But in a case like this, the Supreme Court is telling all you ladies what you're going to do with your bodies. so you can't get the proper health care. See, that's euphemisms. And,
well, a lot of them are advocating using abortion as a form of birth control.
Yeah. You know. And I think, actually, I've got a good verse for that. But so just some comments. Obviously, this is a very emotional issue versus a lot of logic and facts. A lot of heat versus light. That's a, you know, could say a lot of heat, anger versus the light of discussing. And so it's under the guise of women's health, control of my body. I don't want some man telling me what I can do to my body. And of course, from biblical, scientific, biological, but it's not your body. It's the body of the child. So life begins at conception when the sperm fertilizes the egg. And there are now 46 chromosomes. Do you want me to draw you a map? Okay, that's science, biology. And so over the years, a lot of Supreme Court abuse, if you will, legally. So Roe v. Wade, you probably all you guys remember back in 73 when that happened, legalized abortion on demand in the first trimester. In the second and third trimester, there were actually limits. We got to get rid of those. Except to protect the life and health of the mother. That's the exception that's always trotted out. Then in 73 later was Doe v. Bolton. Do you remember that one? And that defined the health of the mother. There are only limits for the health of the mother. Well, the health of the mother was now redefined as to include emotional, psychological, familial, anything, you know, that if I have to have this baby, I'll be sad. That's reason enough. You can abort the baby. And then Dobbs then, back in however many years ago that was, sent the issue back to the states, which was the proper constitutional thing to do. Now each state is accountable before ultimately God, even if they don't know it, is accountable for what we do. And Colorado is not picking up on that. And that's why they're wanting to put it on the Constitution as an enshrined right of a woman to get an abortion in the Constitution. That's, I mean, states can do that, but that is a horrible evil. And that's why vote no on 79. Some related issues. I mean, none of us probably are going to be having children here in the near future. I wouldn't think. But some related issues that do affect us. That affects things like euthanasia, assisted suicide. You know, we're not going to really talk much about those, but once again, life. Do we have the right to, you know, all you old people are, if you're older than 60, you're worthless. Let's just get rid of you guys are using up way too of the medical resources. So you can see, and in some countries, that's Canada. They are encouraging euthanasia to take the strain off the health system.
And isn't it interesting that when the original arguments for Roe were made, that once again we're talking about the slippery slope and how if you devalue life in the womb, you devalue life all the way across.
And that's a sort of a worldview, a principle, and you see how sin, once the camel gets its nose under the tent, pretty soon you've got the whole camel in there. And so popular arguments that you hear, which maybe tell me why these are wrong, but what about rape, incest, or the life of the mother? Because that's preserving life. How do you honestly, and that would be a lot of prayer and, you know, Is it truly necessary with medical advances? There are very, very, very few exceptions where you actually have to choose either or. But there may be some times when the life of the mother absolutely can be saved if we terminate the pregnancy. That would be tough. But you are trying to preserve life. And if death occurs sort of accidentally, you know, not on purpose, that's a little different. What about rape and incest? Those are horrible crimes.
Is it the baby's fault?
Yeah.
See, that's an emotional. Well, what if incest? Okay, that's a horrible crime. Cut off the man's unit. You know, I'm all for punishment there, but that's a human being in the womb, and so the human being should not pay that price. And oh, by the way, adoption. There are so many people that want to adopt babies. So it's not like, you know, I can't bear to look at this child, you know, and that make me feel sad. So abortion's okay.
Child away to it.
Yeah.
And you go, so you're gonna love it, you're gonna kill it.
And then we can stop adopting all those babies from China, because those are all a bunch of Manchurian candidates, you know it. So we want good. Same thing with rape. It's a horrible crime. Biblically, I mean, I'm not really saying, rape ought to be a capital punishment. Biblical times it was. Not today. But that's a horrible crime. But once again, the baby shouldn't suffer for the crime. DJ.
Yesterday, I listened to a politician who said, we have to keep the borders open because we have to our birth rate is down.
Yeah.
Hello? Probably, because he's an idiot.
Well, did you? There was an old meme about somebody praying, Lord, why haven't you sent us, you know, a scientist to cure cancer? And the meme was, God says, well, I did, but you aborted the kid.
Yeah.
Okay.
So. And since God, I was just reading this morning, between just in 2023, abortions increased by 11%.
Yeah, and states like Colorado, unfortunately, are doubling down on, you know, because this has become a almost, you know, you can see my bias, of course, but almost a religious article for the left. You know, that's a sacrament almost. We have to be able to show our independence, our power. Nobody's going to tell me what to do, you know. And so so does the father get any say? No, of course not. So, you know, a teen pregnancy. Well, what if the snot-nosed boy that was typical boy just won free milk from the cow? That didn't sound very good. But you know what I mean? What if that young man wants his child? He gets no say. Okay, so. If she wants to keep it, then he's got to pay. Which, okay, pal, if you undid your pants, you're responsible, pal. Okay, one more.
Then you have the women who maintain that. Well, I live in a state that doesn't allow the abortions, but I don't have the money to travel to a state that allows it.
And companies are paying for that. The military, I think, is paying for it. In violation of the Hyde Amendment, yeah. Okay, so here's a verse, Jeremiah 7:31. It's talking about the judgment, you know, Jeremiah judgment on Judah and their false religion. Talking about, and they, the people, have built the high places of Tophet, high places, altars to false gods, idolatry, which is in the valley of the son of Hinnom, so, to burn their sons and daughters in the fire, which I did not command, nor did it come to my heart. And they're burning their sons and daughters to the, I might have been a, yeah, Molech, I can't remember if that was a Canaanite, or, but in the Middle East, they're the false god Molech. The Hinnom Valley, if you've ever been to Jerusalem, the Hinnom Valley is south and south of main part of Jerusalem that has now been filled in from the old city of David. And that was the garbage dump. And they burnt the garbage. And the part of this false religion to Molech, the god pagan, the idolatrous god Molech, were fertility rites. And so, you know, free love and sex, and they would have kids. Well, we don't want the kid, so we're going to sacrifice and burn the children to Molech in the garbage dump where the fire was. And so Hinnom, Gehenna, is the Hebrew word for hell, Gehenna, from Hinnom, a burning sulfurous, you know, garbage dump. And that's where kids were sacrificed to Molech. That's an early form of abortion, if you will. And the kid was first delivered. They didn't have the medical means necessary related to abortions in utero. But that's just the life, taking life of a child, unborn or early born, is evil. And so we should be voting for pro-law, pro-life candidates, and back to the Supreme Court. Now, we covered that one a little, and we spent a lot of time. We're not going to spend that much time on it. So any final comments or questions about that? You know, I'm not going to poll everybody. Do we agree? But catch me offline if you need to correct me. All right, so the next one, capital punishment in crime. So in general, the Bible does talk about capital punishment. It is a function, a God-given function of government. Actually, Kelvin, would you read Genesis 9, 5 through 6? At least we'll cover one verse. Five through six. 10 through 6. Read back.
Truly, for your lifeblood, I will demand a reckoning. From the hand of every beast, I will require it, and from the hand of man. From the hand of man, every man's brother, I will require the life of man. Whoever sheds man's blood, by man his blood shall be shed. For in the image of God, he was made man.
Okay, everybody get that? Because life is precious, and people, we've talked about the image of God. If somebody commits a capital crime, which in the Old Testament there were lots of them, but especially what we would call today premeditated murder, that is such a horrible crime that they should bear the punishment. Romans 13, I won't read it, but talks about Paul talking about the government, the king is God's minister to you for good. You know, even evil kings are providing some good. But if you do evil, be afraid, for he does not bear the sword in vain. What did they use the sword for in the Roman legions? Killing people. So the king bears the scepter, if you will, the sign of his power, that he has the authority to punish evildoers. And here's one of my favorite verses, just on crime in general, Ecclesiastes 8:11. Because the sentence against an evil work is not executed speedily. not after the 8 appeals and 20 years. No. If the sentence is not executed speedily, therefore the heart of the sons of man is fully set in them to do evil. Duh. You know, if there's no deterrence there, because, well, my lawyer will be working on this and I'll die in prison before I'm put to death. So, Ecclesiastes 8:11. That's a good one. So just biblically, because life is precious, capital punishment is mandated. So the constitutional view, once again, life, those types of things, that's a state domestic issue. I should be saying domestic versus foreign. So domestic issue, which is sort of covered in the preamble and the of the Constitution, to protect life, liberty, property. Those are not, that doesn't give the federal government the right to do all those things, but it's saying, how are we going to do this? 10th Amendment, you states, it's a domestic issue. State and local laws, yes, they should have capital punishment. And then Colorado get rid, you know, how many states now have capital punishment? Don't know.
I think we still have it.
Very, and because Ecclesiastes 8 and 11, we never actually put someone to death that needs to be. So the federal government, there are some federal crimes, you know, treason, something like that, that occurs, military, you know, things that the federal government has the power, certain areas. Federal government can exercise that authority. But the federal government should be encouraging and not hindering the states from this. And that happens all the time. So we talked about just the worth of individuals. That's why the value of life, liberty, property. And as Christians, we stand against evil. So that's why, you know, I have a brother-in-law who is a clerk for one of the, whatever the court is just below the Supreme Court, appeals court. And he's a clerk for one of the justices. And he has a saying, well, Your Honor, sometimes a man needs killing. Okay, and so because we're kinder and gentler, right? And what is one of the arguments that which amendment is it that cruel and unusual that gets abused? You know, we don't want cruel and unusual punishment. I agree, and well, Your Honor, if we put him to death, that'll make him feel sad. He'll be dead. You know, so I'm all for, you know, humane capital punishment. What happened is the day when we could just, you know, just line him up and, you know, give him a good, make sure somebody can shoot first. But you know, painless death, I'm for that. I don't want to torture anybody. And then you send the bull, the bill for the bullet to the family. Okay, a quote from Thomas Jefferson. Whereas it frequently happens that wicked and dissolute men, resigning themselves to the dominion of inordinate passions, commit violations on the lives, liberties, and property of others, and the secure enjoyment of these having principally induced men to enter into society, government would be defective in its principal purpose were it not to restrain such criminal acts by inflicting due punishments on those who perpetrate them, but corresponding graduation of punishments. And then he lists the appropriate punishments. The Eighth Amendment. you know, no cruel and unusual punishments. And that's the terminology in the Bible. An eye for an eye, that's not, yeah, go get them for an eye for an eye. That's restrain your punishment to an eye for an eye. Because, you know, back in the old days, even in Muslim countries today, you steal, they're going to chop your hands off.
Just one.
Just one. And I'll give them my left hand. Yeah. So obviously we should vote for pro-law, tough-on-crime candidates. That's a function of government at the state level.
So, Dieter, on the ballot, though, I think the issue related to your topic here is the extension of sentencing life by about a year. So that's kind of, that's probably the
doctor's appointment.
Thanks for coming. Good to see you. We'll see you tomorrow. Yeah.
That's what I'm saying. That's the ballot issue. We're not going to get the vote on that.
Yeah.
I'm not sure why they picked 85. I don't know the background, the ballot type. Just, I think there's some people that are victims that are frustrated.
Yeah. All right, so the next one, somebody, we've got to speed it up here. War, yes, that is a function of human government, biblically, to protect citizens. Constitutionally, that is a foreign issue, wars. And so, yes, the federal government does have the power to make war. And, oh, by the way, only Congress should be declaring war, not, you know, not police states, police actions, or whatever we euphemistically call them. Or what did Putin call his invasion of Ukraine? A special military operation. Okay. So, and that's given to the federal government in enumerated powers, Article 1, Section 8, paragraphs 11 to 13, 16. So that is an enumerated power given to the federal government. So we should be voting for strong defense candidates, which is a function of government. And we were talking about, Scott was talking about earlier during our men's breakfast, that during the no-fly zones between the Gulf Wars, Congress, you know, a lot of people that aren't veterans, don't understand the military. They're sort of chicken hawks, where we think the military can be used to do anything. And they're trying to get the Air Force to do, well, we want you to do this, this, and this. And the Air Force was pushing back saying, with what? Our planes are worn out, our crews are overworked. And so when it comes to budgets then, instead of spending money on non-constitutional entitlements and handouts, one thing the federal government should be spending money is the military. And I'm trying to go a little faster here because.
I agree with Dan. There's a limit to what's considered protection and what's.
All right, so do you have the did I give you the complete notes? Because one of the discussions, just war theory. If you want to get into just war theory, that defines a lot of that, that defense is, I want your oil, so I'm going to. And the Roman Empire, I get a kick out of this. The Roman Empire grew to its greatest extent fighting defensive wars. They picked a fight, and oh, look, they're threatening us. And they just started conquering. So what is defense biblically? And that's Augustine, just war theory. So Christian theologians discussed how to biblically make war.
Yeah, and only Congress has the power to declare war.
Yeah.
The you have to look and see how many times that's actually happened. Yeah.
When's the last time, was it? World War II, yeah. Okay, and the president is the commander-in-chief, so this is not mandated, but I like having veterans in Congress as president. So, strong defense candidates. Marriage. So this is one of the issues. Vote no. Did they reword that anyway, Hal? But it's vote no on J. Right. Get rid of the prohibition. Get that out of there. No, we want that in there.
But the reason they're doing those for constitutional amendments is that in case the legislature comes up with conservatives,
that's right.
They can change the laws that were passed in the past few years, but it would still be constitutionally okay.
Yes.
The Constitution, because that's part of the change.
It's all related to tax benefits. That's what's so frustrating. We created an economy. Or being married gives you a benefit, so now you have the same sex issue, or they want the financial.
And we're forced to pay for that. And that's a whole other topic about constitutional initiatives. Why do we have a legislature? Vote the bums out. Why do we go around how could we go around the legislatures and hold them accountable? Well, like what Scott said. Says who?
They're done by
unions.
A civil union.
Instead of
and I don't know if you guys, some of you are here, but we went through that here in the church. That in our building use, you know, in other words, could this building be used for a homosexual marriage? And, you know, to me, that's a non-issue. Of course not. But you better have that written somewhere. And so we worded it, you know, I thought that our building, it's just a building, will only be used for God, biblical glory, which means as long as I'm pastor, it's not going to happen. But, you know, the next bum you get, maybe might change their mind wrong. Okay, So the biblical view, yes, marriage is important. It's a creation mandate. The pattern has always been biblically one man, one woman. It's a biblical institution. Constitutionally, that is not a fet. That's a domestic issue, but it does not belong under the purview of the federal government. But state and local laws should be supreme and. We should not have, you know, so you're voting no on Jay. And federal government, see, here's the problem again, should encourage and not hinder the state laws that preserve traditional marriage. Well, you know that doesn't happen. So we should be voting for pro-traditional marriage candidates because that's biblical. And once again, that's the importance of the Supreme Court to try to prevent the arrogation of power by the federal government into states' rights. And if you remember the Obergefell decision, good old Anthony Kennedy and Scalia had a great say. He in his dissent, Justice Scalia said of Kennedy's opinion, he has all the reasoning of the moral aphorisms of a fortune cookie. In other words, where do you pull these penumbras, shadows out of the Constitution, if you remember that, emanations and penumbras, that I found that in between the text of the Constitution, and Scalia went, just roasted him. But that's, you know, what the Supreme Court can do if they don't. Originalism, textualism if they don't interpret the Constitution properly.
We have a tough road to hoe in that area in Colorado, yes, since our governor is one of them.
Yeah. Yeah, and so it's in our Constitution right now, but yet our governor is a homosexual. So obviously you need attorney generals, you know, back to the capital punishment law, people that will enforce the law. Now, I don't agree with all laws, but as a Christian, I follow them unless they directly tell me to disobey God directly. So, you know, best example is if Colorado told my wife she had to get an abortion over my dead body. But these ridiculous speed limits, I mean, 75, come on. My car goes 100. You know, I may not like that, but now I follow the speed limit. I didn't used to. So, marriage, vote no on J. Taxes. Here's a good one. Biblically, yes, of course, taxes are permitted as a function of government. Constitutionally, it's foreign and domestic. So federal, state, local laws, they can have taxes. Enumerated powers, and then the 16th Amendment at the federal level was for an income tax. And so government is allowed to have taxes to function constitutionally. There's the rub. The amount of taxes, all that extra money is being used for extra constitutional things. If the federal government could, you know, a politician restraining himself for money, but if the federal government only did what it's supposed to, guess what? Taxes would be a lot less. And if you don't like the taxes in California, you move to Colorado and change our vote. Well, there are the locals. Yeah. And so the conclusion, we should vote for fiscally responsible candidates that don't abuse. See, this is Article 1, Section 8, the General Welfare Clause. I mean, Congress likes to drive a Mack truck through that clause. Well, that's general welfare. So we can give money to illegal immigrants. And the Commerce Clause is another one. Because, that crossed a state boundary, so we get regulated. No, if you understand that. I'm not going to go into that, but if government does what it's supposed to, taxes could be less. We want congressmen that are fiscally responsible. Please stop me. I'm trying to get through these quicker than usual because some of these are not quite as interesting. Immigration, here's a big one. Biblical view, yes, that they were, you know, Old Testament Israel. Yes, we took in immigrants, but immigrants had the responsibility for assimilation. Things like, back that day, if you want to come to Israel from Moab, men, you're getting circumcised. I think I'll stay in my own country. But constitutionally, that is foreign. So the federal government should protect the U.S. borders. Stop. And help the states. So, you know, just think how backwards this is. Some states are trying to protect their border and they are being sued by the federal government. If that's not black is white, white is black, I don't know what it is.
You got all these people at war have read Thomas Jefferson and they all want to be Americans.
Well, and okay, and there's a lot more we could talk about if you want to, but that's under the enumerated powers. So Article 1, Section 8, Paragraph 4, citizenship and naturalization, and the 14th Amendment did deal with this. In the original context, what does that mean? That's not throw open the southern border for all the Haitians and things. So we should be voting for pro-legal and positive immigration. Our nation has taken in more immigrants than anyone, and illegal immigrations, the way it's worded, is if they benefit our nation, they're welcome to come, but they have to be, they have to assimilate. In the clause, I forget, it's probably in some of my in-depth comments, but one of the clauses, birthright citizenship, things like that. You can come here, but you have to be subject to our nation. You're not coming here from China and you're going to be a Chinese living in America. You are an American with Chinese roots. And that's, so we want immigrants that benefit our nation legally, you know, not, but what about all those yard jobs and melon pickers and who's going to do it? Well, Americans that are getting handout checks handed out, let's put them to work, maybe. So we should be pro-legal, you know, tough on borders, and a wise use and control of workers' visas. So there are legal ways to get melon pickers, but, you know, we have to do that wisely. Legal. Okay, what about welfare and economics? Well, biblically, yes, of course. It's encouraged as an act of responsible compassion. So the Bible talks about taking care of the widows, the orphans. So of course that's a good thing. And if we had unlimited money and, you know, could just wave a magic wand, gee, that'd be great. But according to the Constitution, that is a domestic issue, and we are protecting the life, the liberty, and the property of the citizens. Well, a lot of the immigrants that are coming in now are not protecting citizens. You know, they are taking priority over the citizens. Little anecdote, the Army-Navy game, the hotels that people want to stay in these nice hotels for the Army-Navy game. They can't because they're housing migrants. You know, these hotel chains, nice five-star hotels are being forced to house illegal aliens. And yes, the church has advocated and given up. Well, the government will do it. We don't want to spend our money on that. And so, and we'll get to that here just. And so the federal government, well, should be encouraging the private sector. And so we should, federal government should not be, yeah, should not be giving handouts. Don't usurp state, local, private sector rights like the hotels. Federal government, you can't come tell me my hotel chain is going to start housing these people. That's, and they do that through bribery sometimes. So we should be voting against government welfare champions. Who was it, de Tocqueville, that said democracies will never work because once the people realize they can vote themselves money. Once 51% of the people start voting themselves money out of the public purse, we're going to bankrupt ourselves. And both candidates, yeah, I've seen the pander bear calling, in this case, the Democrat nominee a pander bear. Whatever audience she's in front of, I promise to give you guys lollipops and, you know, all sorts of things. And unfortunately, the Republican candidate is promising the same thing, that we're going to, I'm going to give you a special tax break. Hey, I'm all for tax breaks, but general welfare means no special interest group is given benefits that the other people aren't. So we should vote for local compassion with helping agencies. So the church, there, you know, Samaritan's Purse, you know, we as a church should be doing that at our level, you know, but it's so easy. Well, if the federal government's got a program, we might as well take use of, make use of it. It's never going to go away. Kelvin.
There's a great story from Davy Crockett when he was a congressman. There was a fire. Congress said, oh, we need to give these people money because it was in Arlington, and they all went out to see it. And so they voted like $20,000 to help the victims of this fire. Well, he goes back home to campaign, and an influential local citizen says, I'm never voting for you again because you obviously don't understand the Constitution. That's not your job. And so he goes back. Chasen gets reelected, goes back, and they say, oh, let's provide a benefit for some widow, some federal employee, military person, whatever, you know, he died, and so they're gonna pay a benefit for his widow. And Crockett stood up and said, you know, this isn't our job, but I'm the poorest man in the office here. I will give a week's pay, and if everybody else puts up a week's pay, it'll be more than what's in this bill. The bill went down to defeat, but he was the only one who ever gave up money. Yeah. It was easy to spend somebody else's money.
That's a good story. Yeah, and I mean, and human nature, I mean, the Big Ten, thou shalt not covet, thou shalt not steal. If politicians, it's not our money, I can buy votes with your money. And so, you know, tax increases, Congress has never met a tax increase they don't like. So we should be voting for government to stay in its lane. Okay, health care. Well, biblically, yes, of course. Salvation does include the physical. Okay? God is concerned about his people. So biblically, health of people, the greatest illness, of course, is sin. Constitutionally, that is a domestic issue, protect life, liberty, property. But so state and local laws, yes, encouraging the private sector for health insurance, health care, which, you know, you could get off on a tangent. Why is health care so expensive? You know, that's lawyers, bureaucrats. My dad, I have a personal story. My dad was a radiologist. He had to spend more money than probably any of us make each year on malpractice insurance just to protect himself from frivolous lawsuits. And he's a radiologist. He doesn't even see the patient. And so he would read the x-rays, but he could be held accountable. And that's why doctors made my dad rich, because guy'd come in, my finger hurts. Well, let's x-ray that finger. No, we've got to get a whole panoply of, my dad would read all these x-rays, and I mean, I could read those x-rays. Yeah, your leg's fine, your leg's fine, your other arm's fine. Oh, yep, that finger's broken. And so he would make money on all these extraneous, trying to avoid the lawsuit from the recommending physician. Just ridiculous. So vote against big government health care. And here's another personal story. I was a huge beneficiary of Obamacare. I got free health care because of my taxable salary. I was considered poor. And so I got free. You guys, thank you very much. You paid for my health care. Yeah, and so whatever the premiums were, which were ridiculous, but like $1,300 a month, I didn't have to pay a cent because government was subsidizing my health care. Now that I'm 60 and a half. Now I have a benefit that I earned through the military. So I was able to get off of Obamacare, and now I have TRICARE. In fact, I even called Anthem, the healthcare, and I said, cancel me now. Well, you're good till the end of the year. I can at least skip another month if you guys paying for my healthcare. I'm not 65. When I'm turned 65, that works in conjunction with government healthcare. And I'm not going to go into the history of that, you know, for the comments, but we won't talk about that. Where did Medicare and Medicaid come from? Is that a government, federal government function? No, it is not. But, you know, it's one of those things, if they're going to give it to me, you know, I'm... And they would say, that lockbox, right? Yeah, all my money's sitting in the... No, they use that to pay for the hotels for the illegals. And so that's, you know, that's what the third rail in politics, Medicare. So, I mean, it's a system we have gotten addicted to. And it would, you know, for you people, let's say, I mean, if suddenly all of a sudden people, if we just cut that off, no politicians, you know, they're worried about their own careers. Nobody's going to get rid of Medicare. And you guys, you know, the federal government should honor these programs, but we should be, my opinion, we should be weaning off of them, but you don't pull the rug out from people that are living on the promise. But we got to get rid of them, and that's never going to happen.
For me, I think the spiritual issue would be interesting to discuss is what's the role of insurance in your life? I'm serious. I mean,
health insurance?
Yeah, this is insurance. And if you look up insurance in the Bible, I would challenge someone to find the word. So it gets down to how that's, we're using, they're using our tax money, Social Security is insurance.
Yeah.
That's how it's worded. You get into Medicare, it's going to be insurance.
Yeah.
So the spiritual issue is you have the option not to pay. Now, in some cases, you don't. In your case, you're paying for my Social Security.
Actually, I'm not. That's one thing that, as a minister, my minister pay. Now, I have other income where I am. But and that's alibi right there. And the government should not be involved.
I'm just bringing up a challenging issue for everyone as we close our day. Is that look at insurance and what its role is in your finances. If you're going broke because you're being insurance, maybe you need to be depending on God for some of this stuff. You know, so that's kind of where I'm at.
Right.
I mean, I'm telling you, these insurance bills are getting outrageous. You can imagine Florida right now with their home insurance. They're not even going to be covered in.
And that's, and so if, you know, for personal people to buy it, that's your choice, should be your choice, not forced to by the government. And in today's culture, whether whether it's wise to have it or not, that's up to each individual. But it's something that, why are the prices so high? Lawyers, and what is being covered, and who are you subsidizing? Knuckleheads like me. I don't pay my insurance. You pay it for me, so your premiums are higher because you are paying for government-mandated insurance. And what Hal, you know, is with regard to health insurance, of course we know God is a God of healing. And you know, he can, and salvation is more than just spiritual. But in today's world, until Jesus comes again, God does work through doctors, nurses, to some level. We talked about that, last week, when it came to the blind man, that not all illness is a result of sin. Because of the fall, not necessarily personal sin. Now that can happen. I think I used the example if you overdose with drugs, your personal sin can cause death. That's a direct result. But because we live in a fallen world, if you women hadn't eaten us out of the Garden of Eden, we'd all be perfectly healthy. So it's your fault. So, but yeah, that's Hal's point is good. Insurance, first of all, the government shouldn't be providing it or mandating it. And then the wisdom of your individual family, that should be, you know. And there are people, example of Helene, people in the mountains of North Carolina, we don't need flood insurance. I'm not going to pay for that. And now, well, your insurance doesn't cover that. Is it the federal government's job to come in and bail them out? Pun intended. See, that's hard, because compassion would say, we want to help them out because this is a 1,000-year flood. But, you know, that's one of those living in a fallen world. You know, I wouldn't have flood insurance. Now, what am I going to do? You know, when the insurance company says, we offered you a policy, and like Hal says, yeah, a ridiculous amount of money to pay for something I'm never going to need. Well, guess what? Now I need it. So, and
you know, so this is kind of a personal issue because my family is in North Carolina and Tennessee right now, and I'm getting up-to-date reports, you know, from Navy and government, FEMA's use list, that kind of thing. FEMA's nothing but a paycheck. What I'm trying to get into is that you, when you look at your finances, we look at our voting, we need to be looking at the spiritual aspects of it and what God's role is for us. He promises to provide. And I'm hearing case after case where people are stepping in. They one of the high schools had all their football equipment washed away. They had a game coming up on Friday, and all of a sudden all this equipment showed up from all over the country so these guys could play their game. And you know, the coaches were crying and everything else like this because of this need that we're seeing as a country. So, you know, I started looking into scriptures about what our role is in government, and there's a lot. If you look at 1 Timothy Chapter 2, the very beginning of it, I can pull it up for you. But we're supposed to pray for good government. And how many Americans sit here and complain about our government when you say, hey, pray for it? You know, like, well, what do you pray for? You pray for the king and those in authority, and you're praying that we have a peaceful life, that they be saved. Oh, wow. Is anybody praying for Biden to be saved? You know, I'm just saying there's a spiritual battle going on behind all this. We owe it to pray for that spiritual intercession that takes place, that needs to take place. How many people are drawn or asking God to draw I keep calling it to draw these candidates to Jesus? Can you imagine if we had a reformation or so to speak, a revival, where the candidates actually started trying to institute biblical principles in the laws and the speeches? Now you're going to have to break away from bribery, right? You know, it's such a corrupt government right now, and they're forced to try to raise money, and we've got to intervene there and give them support and hope to say, hey, you've got to walk away from this stuff. You've got to stand your ground. We need to be debt free as a country. We need to keep away from debt. And so all I'm saying is write those letters, keep encouraging, keep praying, because it does make an impact.
And if you had been here 2 weeks ago, that's exactly what we talked about. What is our role under human government in general, biblically? And we should be praying for our government, and we should be good citizens. Now we're narrowing it down to constitutionally, government, which government should be paying for this? See, the federal government should not be involved. And that's what we should be praying for them to get saved so maybe they'd understand these things. But, you know, we live in a fallen world. But state and local government and compassion, Samaritan's Purse, you know, organizations. See, that is encouraging. And I love FEMA's almost getting a little mud in their face because these other groups are stepping up the way they should. It's not FEMA's job, ultimately, to be doing this. Now, the North Carolina FEMA, well, okay, they would bear more responsibility than the federal government. And we as Christians, like Kelvin said, you know, it'd be nice if, well, we sort of do that. If we, you know, we contribute to organizations that are on the ground that do this. But, and you said, why doesn't the church do that? The problem, part of the problem is because the federal government is doing it. And so churches, it's very easy for churches to, well, why should we win the federal government? We've got a program for that. Well, we shouldn't have a program for that. But which comes first, us helping or the federal government helping? And that's a good thing for us individually to think about. Do we look to Washington as Christians for most all of these? If you've seen, we should not be. And we should be voting accordingly so that, if nothing else, the candidate for president. I want a president that understands that. I would love to have a president candidate. Mr. President, what are you going to do about the price of bread in the grocery stores? Not my job. Next question. You know, but one thing the federal government could do is get out of the way so that inflation and all that stuff, the role the federal government has usurped, that causes this stuff. You have caused the problem to some degree, but it's, you know, main thing is stop doing what we're doing. You know, now I'm preaching. I'm intrigued at the idea of Elon Musk being the czar of cutting government. I would love, there are so many departments in the government that we should not have constitutionally. So if the federal government would get out of people's lives so that in a crisis, catastrophe, used to call these acts of God, so the federal government could, yeah, the insurance companies love that. We don't cover acts of God. So what am I paying this insurance for? But if the federal government would get out of the way, then people would be encouraged to do what Hal's talking about, to individual compassion, you know, prayer, things we can do as the church. So, you know, then, that goes back to a lot of church history that we're not going to cover right now. So, all right, let's just get through these last few here. Environment, okay, of course we should take care of the environment. We are the pinnacle of creation. It's not the federal government's job. It's a domestic issue, state, local. You know, we would want to be good stewards of our creation, of course. But this, you know, that you can see a worldview, climate change, Mother Earth, all those things. So the federal government has a very limited role to protect citizens and mediate between the states, yes. But we should be voting against big government, environmental champions and the candidates that, you know, because government loves, and this is where we got a lot, you know, the federal agencies. Richard Nixon gave us the EPA, you know, and that's the all laws should come through Congress. That's Article 1. And so the vote is, are you for clean air? Yes, yes, I'm for clean air. It was a unanimous vote. It's a bipartisan thing. Then they turn it over to an agency to actually mandate and control and fine and take to jail and all those things. So that's the administrative state. We talked about that last time, and that's unconstitutional. So we should watch out for candidates that are promising to make the air you breathe cleaner. You know, that's That is not the role of government. And we're worshiping the creation, if you have read. You were commanded to do it. On your
in all seriousness, it is real. But it's not the reason people think. Four forces of nature, I won't go into this now, but if anybody in the church would like to know more specifics, what we need to know is the economic impact of water. And the fact of the matter is, we are in a drought. The south part of the United States is in it, and Venezuela, that whole area is in a drought. Ukraine is a main supplier of food and bread to the Mediterranean, and that's why Russia is going into it. And so this human migration that we're seeing coming up from the south, we predicted 15 years ago, because people got to eat, okay? People got to have water. And so these two hurricanes hit the south, and there was horrendous drought in the south for years now. You know, this has been going on, and so that's why there's so much flooding. My point being is that it's not this politically, but it's something that we should be concerned about, and it's going to have major impacts, but that's not the issue of the politicians.
And well, the question that the politicians try to make it, what's the cause of that? See, the idea that it's... And the hubris, thinking we can control hurricanes.
The United Nations has already gone to policies about seeding, cloud seeding, causing acts of war. So China and India, Pakistan are under a severe drought. The water reservoirs are disappearing. And so the point being is that this is way bigger than us. Now, what's the impact to us is... And that's where I'm saying, I don't think there's an issue on the ballot about climate environment, is there? I don't recall anything. But the immigration issue is tied to that, even though it's indirectly. So
yeah.
To me, like you just covered, the church really does need to get more involved in helping this situation out.
How?
What an opportunity to save people, right? If we can sit there and help provide need, we can provide jobs, etc.
Not change the climate. My bumper sticker, I have a bumper sticker. Somebody asked me, do I believe in climate change? Of course. Due to solar activity, the Earth's orbit, the axis of the Earth's axis, you know, we call it winter, we call it summer. You know, that's... So I believe in normal cyclical temperature mean changes because of Earth's orbit, solar activity. But if you're talking about anthropogenic, which means man-caused global warming, no, absolutely not. And that's where the politicians get involved, thinking somehow we're going to, you know, on your OPR, did you get on your, you know, your climate czar, I lowered the Earth's mean temperature by 0.1 degree, and you got a big bonus on your OB. No, I'm just kidding. But you know, the idea that man, you know, causes this, what is the role of CO2? And the idea that it's a crisis. The Earth's temperature has gone up, you know, however, 1 degree, whatever it is, and it's a crisis. Do you think there might be a little political agenda in that, and control, and based on a lot of pseudoscience? I have an uncle. Yeah, never mind. Let's not go there. But his son was drilling ice cores in Antarctica, and he knows. You know that man did that. You know, and you claim the Earth is billions of years old. So I don't think there were men around back then. To, you know, so.
Oh, yeah, Greta Thornburg.
How dare you? So, but like Al, go ahead.
I just want, there's, I've heard a couple things that, you know, we're talking about taking care of these people coming. Well, if there was a border that was being enforced, those people wouldn't be here to come here and to have to take care of them. So to say there's a church job to take care of people that shouldn't be here is...
Yeah, a lot of overlapping...
Yeah, there might be climate problems. Yeah, there might be people coming. But if the government was doing its job and not letting those people into the country, they wouldn't be here as a problem to take care of them. Yes, we could take care of them elsewhere, but that's a different problem and a different thing to take care of.
Yeah, that's a, you can see a lot of overlap. And biblically, see, we didn't get, I'm not giving you, each one of these could go on for 2 hours because I've got a lot of material we could have covered. But biblically, we are to be stewards of the environment. So environmentalists, in the biblical sense of God's creation, not Mother Earth, not, you know, not the hubris of controlling weather, but creation mandate of having dominion over God's creation. Yes. So the true environmentalists, in the proper definition of that word, we should be involved in that. And like Hal said, there are things we could and should be doing, but this is a political discussion. This is another area that the federal government, especially, and state governments, but more the federal government. Al Gore, he wrote the definitive work of An Inconvenient Truth. But government loves to step into this area. And ultimately, it can come down to political control that, you know, if you people would stop using gas cars, the people in Africa would be able to eat. Really? So, next one, education, vote yes on AD.
Well, there is a ballot.
Yeah, vote yes on school choice. And yeah, the state. That's the constitutional or the ballot initiative at the state level. I'm only, you know, I'm not giving all the, you know, the 1% sales tax. I'll let you vote the way you want on that. I know how I'm voting, but I want school choice. You know, as a good home, as a homeschooler, I know what I don't need all these things we've talked about. I don't need public education. I don't need somebody telling my kid about environmentalism or same-sex marriage or transgenderism. That's not your job. Teach reading, writing, arithmetic. I'll take care of the rest. And so I will not be personal. So any of you teachers, sorry, I don't want you telling my, not you, but you know what I mean. I don't want you telling my kid from a biblical worldview what to believe. So I want school choice, and I can get a little, you know, the teachers unions don't want that because they want the money of my, they want my tax dollars. See, if it were fair, all those taxes I pay that go to the public schools, you know, I swallow hard and give them that money. But I think that should be my money to use on my kids' education instead of paying for something I disagree with. Now, there are people that really get, you know, follow the money. There are people that really get upset. They think they deserve my tax dollars, even though I don't use the school system. So, any of you public teachers, sorry. Believe me. Yeah, yeah. You, hands off my kid. So obviously, education is important. The Bible, constitutionally, it's a domestic area, state and local laws, yes, but the federal government should not be involved. That's one of the NEA or the Department of Education. That's unconstitutional. Sorry, get rid of it. And Pam would agree with this, wouldn't she? She would, because she's a school teacher. So we should vote for local control education candidates. To quote Emil Faber of Faber College. Good, none of you know that reference. She know, and well, Scott's substituted, and you've seen, you know, David, my son, Georgia does a good job, but, you know, I'm biased, of course. The boy is a pretty smart cookie. And if he went to public school, he would be 8 hours of boredom. And he'd probably be prescribed Ritalin because he has ADHD. No, he's a teenage boy.
So I homeschool my kids. I have pros and cons about it, but I was also at community college. I'm a retired teacher as well. And it's a mix, but I do like the fact that we're focusing on the local issue. Because how the Department of Education works is they just give money to the schools and they teach a certain curriculum. And then the schools turn around and get the extra money. And so they go ahead and teach it, not having an impact on, not assessing the impact on the kids. Yeah. It's the parents that have to get involved and say, no, we don't want the money. We're going to walk away from it. We're going to, you know.
But to get that money, that's a bribery.
So that is the biggest impact you guys can have.
Yep.
And in our church, we encourage that. Parents will involve. Not, you know, kids, you know, Kate and I should be going to the school board meeting.
And local, not to get, we want those federal bucks, so we'll change our bathroom policy. See, that's the type of control.
What's happened in each county, El Paso is very good about this, is that you as a homeschool parent put your kids individually into certain classes.
Yeah.
So, for example, calculus, I know you're right on top of calculus. You may want to use the public school system. Right.
Maybe. Not for David, no.
Well, my point is that
yeah.
You're on the right track. And getting the homeschoolers mixing in with the school system.
And what if my son wanted to play on the football team? I think he should be able to, but there's a lot of pushback. No, you have to put your kid in our mind control, you know, in our system, if you want to be part of it. And what about the socialization skills? What a crock. You mean I want David learning his socialization skills from a bunch of hellions? That's exactly right. Sweet, isn't it? No, they're
national, because I was part of an institute to teach high technology and stuff like this. So what we're finding out is homeschoolers nationally are doing better. They're doing better on the tests. Their academies are starting to bring in the homeschoolers.
Yep.
Curriculum, things like this.
That's why it's threatening to the government, because we don't control it as much as, I mean, they do control it.
Didn't some communist somewhere say, you want to get the kids early so we can teach them?
So on ballot, I mean, I know we're a small group, but on ballot, yeah, we should be voting yes.
Yes, but on 80.
Yeah, yes, because you want that money or availability to go ahead.
Yeah, it doesn't say anything about the money
yet. Yeah, they haven't said that. It's the freedom to tap into these other access funds. Instead of your taxes just going to public education.
That's what they warn about in the argument against.
Yes.
Well, it doesn't talk about the money now, but
and the idea of the, you know, Washington inside the Beltway elites telling Teller County what should be on the curriculum. Scott, you'll appreciate this. Terry Arnholt, I got in some arguments with him because he thought Common Core was good. He thought that was good. I said, no, Terry, no, no. Yeah, but Terry was a closet liberal, and he was all about education. And he looked at the typical, trope or meme that homeschoolers are a bunch of, inbred, homeschoolers that don't teach their kids anything. And so that's the picture of a homeschooler. And so we need to tell those people. See, Terry, you want federal government stepping in where you think it's important, but you don't want the federal government stepping in to tell you to go to church, let's say. Even non-Christians. Yep. Yeah. Here's one story. When I went to, right after the Navy, when I went to be pastor up in Nebraska, a little town, and they're interviewing me for the job. One of the questions maybe I brought up, because a lot of the folks on the board were public school teachers, and I said, is this going to be a problem? We homeschool our kids. Is that going to be a problem? Because if it is, you don't want me for pastor, because we will not send our kids to public school. And it was, at least it was pretty local, and most of the teachers almost in the high school went to our church. So, so I knew at least, and actually I saw some of them, I thought, I don't think I want you teaching my kid. You can barely read yourself. You're a nice Christian, but you're not. And I used to have coffee every week. We got a bunch of men in the community, just got together and did men stuff, but had coffee down at the co-op. And a friend was the superintendent of schools, and Jerry was his name. And he and I got along, but he took it personally that my kids were not in his schools. And one time he got upset at me for something, because he was pretty liberal. And he said, Dieter, when are you going to put your kids in my school? Because that's money. We get money from the federal government for every body we fill in the seats. And I said, Jerry, why don't you go look in the mirror and you'll see the reason why I won't do that. Because I want my kids educated with a biblical worldview, so that there's a greater purpose for all these different subjects that all tie in to, the God's creation, let's say. So anyway, vote yes on 80. Here's one: freedom of religion. I mean, biblically, even in the Bible, genuine faith cannot be forced. Constitutionally, we have the First Amendment. Congress shall make no law respecting an establishment of religion. So, yes, the federal government is prohibited from interfering. And the First Amendment was to protect religion from the government, not the other way around. And so we should be voting for pro-freedom of religion candidates. And that's the importance of the Supreme Court again, because you guys have all heard of Brown versus Board of Education. There have been landmark Supreme Court cases that deal with this very subject. Yeah, and believe me, so chaplain, I can go into that. I have many stories about that while teaching at the Air Force Academy. Freedom of, go ahead.
Where does it state freedom or separation of church and state in there?
Yeah, that's Dan Jefferson, to a letter to the Danbury Baptists, and that has become the code word to save the government from mainly Christians. Other religions are accepted, but it's you Wesley Christians. Freedom of speech, pretty much the same thing. Biblically, yes, that's the First Amendment. And so pro-freedom of speech candidates. And the primary area of freedom of speech was to protect our criticism of the government. Have you seen what some of the proposals are? Mrs. Clinton and even Vice President Harris, we need to outlaw criticism of the government.
Misinformation.
Absolutely. That's exactly why the First Amendment, because people that can't criticize the government, that was one of the unique things of the United States, that we could have the freedom to do that. Where in Russia, if you badmouth PewDiePie, you're gonna get Navalny'd. And Canada, yeah.
When I was at San Jose State in the 1960s, they had a section on the campus that was city property, street, and they had their forum on Fridays. People could go out there and talk, and it was, they had groups come down from Berkeley and their little flowered Volkswagen vans,
yeah.
And they had the Hells Angels and their motorcycles, and they'd argue, but it was all freedom of speech, whereas now, if you try to do that, you're ostracized.
Well, and freedom of speech has become, I have the freedom not to be offended. In other words, it's, anything that I don't like is hate speech. See, that is, there's no such thing as hate speech. I'm sorry. There's speech you may not like. Well, change the channel. Walk away from the soapbox down in the campus. So, all right. Yeah, yep. And I support the right to peaceably protest. But the minute you block traffic, you're trespassing, lock them up. If you're breaking laws. So I figure that one's... Yeah, like the little old lady at the abortion clinic. Okay, then just two more. Second Amendment. Not as big a deal, maybe to most of you, but we should vote no on KK.
Yes.
Should be KKK. Should be KKK. But
it's the firearms and ammunition excise tax.
So in other words, we begrudgingly admit the Second Amendment allows this stuff, but we're going to tax it out of existence anyway. And so the biblical view, yes, we have the right of self-defense, standing against evil. Constitutionally, the Second Amendment gives us that right. The well-regulated militia and all the history of Bill Bowles were still there. And Howard, you too. We could, I've got a lot of stuff on what that meant and what it means today. It's a hunting right. No, it's not. It's, I need the weapons appropriate to defend myself from you, government, if need be.
And when it was written, it was weapons in common use at the time.
Yep.
Which, of course, back then it was written.
Yep. And our...
It says you need no 16, so I want no 16.
Terry Arnold. He didn't like this either. He did not like the fact of the Second Amendment. And so, of course, how do you argue against that? He goes to the extreme example. Well, so do you think everybody should have a flamethrower? And I said, yes, I do, if they could afford it. Do you believe everybody should have a cannon? Yes, if they could afford it. Do you think everybody should have nukes? Sure, if you can afford it. But who was the government official? Maybe it was our current president that said, you know, that you're never going to take our guns. And he says, I'm like, well, we've got F-15s. So you're going to sick the military. You always see what you really mean. You're going to sick the military on law-abiding people. So we should be voting for pro-Second Amendment candidates. Once again, that's the importance of the Supreme Court. And this Supreme Court has gotten a lot, you know, Heller case, a lot of good cases that have mandated, like Scott said, AR rifles. Those are the current common use guns of today. So they're not assault weapons.
Boogeyman.
Boogeyman gun. Shoot, blow your lungs clean out. And then one that's a hot button issue of mine, the last one, support for Israel. Biblically, yes, God chose Israel. It's a biblical institution. Constitutionally, that is a foreign, you know, Secretary of State stuff. So yes, the federal government should have, it has treaty power that's granted to the federal government. We should support Israel under the enumerated powers. Article 1, Section 8, that's the enumerated powers. And you should have a list of those. I wish more Americans understood those 18 enumerated powers. And so, supporting Israel, we can make treaties with the advice and consent of the Senate. So just nations, that's the federal government's job. Now, Israel in specific, that's more biblical in that, like the Abrahamic covenant said, I will bless, God says, I will bless those who bless you, Abraham, Jewish people. And that's one thing President Trump, you know, love him, hate him, his personality. When he moved the capital, the embassy to Jerusalem, that was a major thing. And I approve that. And so we should vote for pro-Israel candidates and support God's people and turn on the news. See, that's a lot of anti-Semitism. You know, yeah, I'll have to, but Rashida Tlaib, Ilhan Omar, there's a lot of anti-Semitism in the world, of course, but also in the church, folks. A lot of anti-Semitism in the church. You know, the church has replaced Israel, all those things. And that's a dangerous road to go down. All right, well, I think that's it. I mean, that's a little longer, but we covered a lot. Any final good words of advice? Nah, we already covered a lot.
Our congressional district has 7.
I think 7, just changed.
Yeah,
it just changed.
They
didn't
include part of Douglas County because it was way too conservative.
So yeah.
The congressional
action goes
up in Douglas County.
I know, but I was curious.
Crazy.
The reason is we've got a voter guide by district. And so we have, there's some issues that weren't on that line list there, but we thought people might want to look at it.
Just mention them quickly, read through them. Because we used to have Doug Lamborn in the 5th. But now we're under what's her name, Peterson, which.
The guy running against her is a great guy. I've got the media in the park when they talk to him.
Sergey
Nesterov. He's naturalized. His family came from Romania or Hungary or something like that. He's totally conservative.
You love guys that came here legally, that appreciate what they have in America. They know what happens if some of these policies go through. Read a couple of the issues.
I'll just go down the list. These are issues that they did a survey on. But you have late-term abortion, government funding of Planned Parenthood, government assistance for illegal immigrants, school choice, Second Amendment rights, domestic oil and gas production, higher taxes and fees, voter ID laws, control and education. So,
okay.
You'd have the time to the ballot. He did a survey.